Good afternoon, everybody. Okay, so I have no personal financial relationships to disclose, and I have a lot of information, so I'm going to try to move swiftly. So African Americans account for 44% of new infections, more than any other racial or ethnic group. And while African American MSM make up the greatest proportion of new infections, African American women account for 64% of new infections among women, and most are a result of heterosexual contact. Estimates from the CDC suggest that 1 in 32 African American women will be diagnosed with HIV infection if current trends continue. And so the South is also disproportionately impacted by HIV and AIDS compared to other regions. The South has the largest percentage of new cases of HIV and the largest percentage of people living with HIV. People living with HIV/AIDS have poorer survival outcomes in the South, and a relatively recent study examining HIV and AIDS in the South found a targeted region or a subset of southern states that includes South Carolina to be disproportionately affected by HIV. So the population of people living with HIV/AIDS in rural areas is growing, although there are some challenges in how rural is defined. Depending on which definition is used, sometimes the rural populations might be over or underestimated. The use of these definitions is important, but it may mean HIV and AIDS in rural areas is not accurately or has not been accurately reflected. The largest proportion of rural cases is in the South. And in South Carolina, the prevalence of HIV/AIDS in rural counties edges out that of urban counties. And so understanding this HIV/AIDS in rural areas is important because of the psychological, physiological, and environmental challenges for rural people living, living with HIV and AIDS who are in rural areas. And so as was mentioned previously, South Carolina is among that subset of southern states that is disproportionately affected. South Carolina ranks eighth, has the eighth highest AIDS rate in the U.S., and Columbia, South Carolina, where the study took place, ranks 10th among MSAs with the highest AIDS rate. And so this graph just shows the cases by year of diagnosis and by race and sex. And so we see here that, as mentioned previously, black males have the highest case numbers. Black women have followed, and in recent years have dropped slightly below below white males. When we look at the cases in South Carolina by race, we see that 69% of them are among blacks. And in South Carolina, black women made up 76% of the cases diagnosed among women. Nearly half of those were contracted through heterosexual contact, with another 46% undetermined. And this map illustrates the prevalence of HIV and AIDS in South Carolina. The pink areas, sort of in the central part of the state, represent the counties that have the highest rates. The three counties in the center are Richland, Sumter, Richland County, Sumter County, and Lee County. And our study was conducted in Richland County, the one at the very center there. So it was conducted in Richland County, but it included participants, women who came from neighboring cities, neighboring counties. Okay. And of note here, I just wanted to emphasize that nearly 34% of South Carolina's population lives in rural areas, and this is based on U.S. Census data information. And I wanted to share this to highlight the primarily rural nature of the state. There are a few urbanized areas, sort of indicated by the gold or yellow areas. Columbia is in the center of the state there. It has, as I mentioned, the highest prevalence. Actually, I don't think I mentioned this, but Columbia has the highest prevalence for HIV/AIDS and encompasses Richland County, which describes itself as uniquely urban and uniquely rural at the same time. And so this is where we conducted our study and thought that this was ideal, an ideal setting to sort of explore rural and urban differences. And so the purpose of this study was to compare the cultural narratives of HIV-positive African-American women living in rural and urban areas to gain insight into the hardships that they experience and the contextual differences based on geography. So we recruited 25 HIV-positive African-American women through three local organizations that serve people living with HIV and AIDS. And the participants were notified of the study through staff who worked at the organizations and instructed them to contact the study personnel if they were interested in participating. And we conducted private interviews in private offices, either at the organizations or at the university, depending on the preference and convenience of the participants. Following informed consent via a letter of invitation, the women completed a 1 to 2 hour interview. The participants received $50 for their time and also to help to cover any transportation costs. The interview guide that was developed used an ecological and a chronological approach. We asked about factors at the individual, interpersonal, community, and institutional level, levels impacting women. And we also asked participants to share their experiences before they contracted HIV, during or around the time when they contracted HIV, and then also while living with HIV. And so participants were given this this diagram at the beginning of the interview, and the interviewer referenced it during the interview as needed. And so for our current for this current study, we focused on the time when women were living with HIV, focused on that time. Okay. So the interviews were transcribed and tagged as either rural or urban based on the participants' assessment. So we didn't have a formal mechanism for measuring this. It was based on their assessment. We conducted a comparative narrative analysis using a sensitizing framework of hardships while living with HIV. And I apologize. we organized the hardships by levels of influence, and this table includes some of the hardships for urban women. And many of these hardships, the hardships experienced by women living in urban areas were also expressed by women living in rural areas. There was considerable overlap, as you might imagine. Women talked about mental health or mental well-being, issues around mental well-being, fear of disclosure, fear of rejection by a future mate or future mates, as well as the burden of secrecy at the individual level. At the interpersonal level, participants discussed issues around, they discussed partner issues, as well as stigma and discrimination experienced by family. Stigma and confidentiality was also an issue at the community level. And then at the institutional level, women talked about reactions by staff in healthcare settings, as well as institutionalized stigma. And then at the sort of larger policy or structural level, one of the participants talked about enforced segregation of HIV-positive inmates in prison. And so I wanted to just give a few examples here, also emphasizing that, you know, these descriptions, stories came from women living in urban areas, but there was overlap, right? So there were these similar experiences. Oh, and even though it's described by urban women living in urban areas, it doesn't mean that it couldn't occur in women living in rural areas. But in this case, one woman described some partner experiences where she specifically discussed her concerns about her partner's unprotected infidelity. And so she said, right now I don't feel comfortable with it because we're really just starting to get back with one another, and I've been using condoms with him for one, and we got back together, was trying to get back together. I found out he was messing around, and I talked to the girl, and I asked her because I wanted to know if they was using condoms or not, because I'm not going to put myself at risk of getting no sexually transmitted disease when I know what I got. So she told me they wasn't using no condoms, so that's why I keep using condoms with him. And in this case, I won't read this one, but in this case, a woman described her experience of stigma with her family, and in particular, with her sister. And so this actually highlighted institutionalized stigma as experienced by, as I said, a woman who had been incarcerated in with the South Carolina Department of Corrections. So as recently as this year, they no longer segregate inmates, but this was the practice, and this reflects her, this woman's experience. She said, they tell me, nope, you're going to Whitney B. Whitney B, the HIV unit. Now imagine you got other inmates on in Whitney A looking over at us on Whitney B and stuff like that. You know, that's humiliating to people that just now come in the building, just now find that they positive, you know. And then for rural women, really quickly, right, there were issues related to mental health and mental well-being. Again, that fear of rejection from future mates, as well as issues around disclosure and the burden of secrecy related to their status. At the interpersonal level, for rural women, family was important, particularly around their fear of disclosure. They expressed, many of the women sort of expressed that family members disclosed their status to others. At the community level, the characteristics of small towns related to the lack of confidentiality was commonly expressed, as was stigma. And then confidentiality was also an issue at the institutional level, particularly concerns around living in or being in a small town. And then there were the larger policy or structural issues around lack of access, lack of transportation, as well as medical negligence, particularly sharing health information. And this, I thought this quote was really telling in terms of experiences of sort of stress and issues around mental well-being. Some of those were of significant concern. And in this example, one participant discussed suicide attempts. She said, I really believe it makes me more depressed being there because when I get in, it got to the point where, and I've been in the country for the longest, that I get so depressed sometimes. Now, which I thank God, it's been 4 or 5 times that I have tried to commit suicide, from cutting myself to trying to drive my car off into the bridge, from running into a tree, you know, taking a handful of pills, got addicted to pills, so it really doesn't help. And she's referring to living in a rural area, not helping. And this quote came from a participant who talked about her sort of self-imposed isolation. I won't read that one out loud. And then this quote epitomized the concerns of living in a small town, where the woman said, where I live, you know, everybody know everybody, or whatever the case may be. So I really can't go nowhere in the name of the town to seek no kind of, I don't know nothing, not even emergency room visit if I can help it. Everyone know everybody. By the time you leave out of there, everybody in the name of the town know what you'd have been to the doctor for and what's going on. And then lastly, this quote highlighted the challenge of transportation and seeking health care among rural women. And so the limitations associated with this study include the women's own assessment of their their rural versus urban status. I mentioned that we didn't have a formal definition that we used. Also, the findings reflect only the experiences of this sample and, of course, may not be reflective of all rural and urban African-American women living with HIV and AIDS. And so in South Carolina, you know, HIV/AIDS prevalence in the rural and urban areas is nearly equal. The burden is nearly equal. There are certain issues that are unique to rural areas, such as the small town characteristics, that there's less education in rural areas and that access to care and to transportation is an issue. And so our assessment is really that the community level issues were really the most salient for women living in rural areas. And so I am wrapping it up. So our findings, we believe, are important and speak to the need for interventions for this population.